Welcome back. This is number 9 in the podcast series, Fat Newborns, Infants, and Kids. The actual book is available as an ebook, paperback, or audiobook at kellygregg.com. Now that the baby is weaned, let us look at genetics a little. If we looked at humans a few hundred years ago, we would see different body shapes among the races. Some were generally leaner, some shorter, some taller, and some huskier. We did not see any races that were genetically obese. Now we see Orientals, who move and adopt the Western diet, are fatter. Same with those from India, same with the natives from South America. The American Indians were known to be an athletic, lean race till the adoption of the Western diet and lifestyle. It was not the DNA that changed, but rather the expression. These epigenetic marks have been inherited through several generations. With the widespread presence of food security, we also see height increasing. This is partially racial, or more likely due to the availability of food during the childhood years. Rapid changes in China over the last 100 years has brought more food, taller children, and now more type 2 diabetes. A lot of studies have been done trying to find the fat gene. We know that fat parents often have fat kids, but when did this start? There did not used to be an incidence of 30% fat children, just like there did not used to be an incidence of 40% fat adults. Did some global mutation take place in Western civilization in the last 100 years that now we have children with some kind of genetic defect that makes them become obese? Several genes have been uncovered that may contribute to the propensity to get fat, but there is no gene, with very rare exception, that we can point to and say, you will be fat. We cannot do prenatal genotyping and say this child will be fat, so we need to change this gene in the blastocyst so that will not happen. I can be more predictive as to who will get fat by just looking at a family portrait. Maybe you will inherit a trait such that you do not make insulin receptors as well, or maybe it's the leptin receptors, or maybe your liver works a little differently, or maybe your fat cells work better than most. I can say that same thing about intelligence, athletic ability, complexion, reading ability, and so on. You may need the right genes to be a professional athlete, but that does not stop you from shooting 70 on the golf course. I see this at the gym all the time. One person can work at lifting weights just as hard as another, yet some are predestined by their genes to be stronger. You may have genes that make you a little heavier, but no one has genes that should make them obese. You may never be thin, but you should not be fat. Modern food has driven you and your kids to that end, but you can control this with the right diet. Even if you do not have genes that could enable you to be a bodybuilder, if you pump iron, you will get bigger and stronger. The same with many of these inherited traits. Pumping iron may induce epigenetic changes in the muscles, but still may not induce enough for you to be Mr. Universe without the right DNA. At the same time, the Mr. Universe DNA will not be expressed unless you do start pumping iron. We look at a family portrait of 3 generations, and all we see are fat people. We have a baby at 2 years old. The mother dutifully followed our prenatal advice through pregnancy and weaning. Is this child now predestined to be obese as an adult, no matter what we do? We do not have the chance to do studies to see if the children were fed the correct diet, most likely not the one the family currently eats. That the child would not grow up to be obese and get type 2 diabetes. We do have experience with animals. For thousands of years, man has been crossbreeding cattle to obtain various characteristics. Nowadays, we want cattle that will bring the most money when they are sold, so we are looking for weight gain and increased fat in the muscles. It's just a matter of economics. Even if we have great cattle, if they are not fed correctly with enough pasture and are not finished correctly with the correct fodder at the end, they do not reach their potential. An Angus cow who does not have great pasture and was not finished will not have as much fat. This is one reason we use soybean fodder, which makes nice fat cattle with an elevated omega-6, omega-3 ratio. Of course, you don't get something for nothing. Also, if we embark on a reverse crossbreeding program, we would eventually get leaner Angus cows, although it may take a few generations. This is the result of epigenetic changes. We would not have to wait for a mutation to occur in the cows to eventually get lean cattle. I do not know for sure, but I believe if we were able to feed this child the correct diet, we could prevent obesity. If we did this, he still would not be cured of the chance to get type 2 diabetes. Eventually, the child leaves home and starts his own diet. Now he is like everyone else and has a chance of obesity or type 2 diabetes when he is 50, although probably less than the general population. I am quite sure we can prevent early onset type 2 diabetes in children, but unless when he is adult and is on the right diet, he may eventually get it. When kids are growing, they get hungry. You do not have to do anything. Their body directs the consumption of nutrients during a growth phase. It is like the first part of most adults' lives. They simply eat when they are hungry and stop when they are not, and their weight remains almost the same, although in children it's not the weight but the BMI that remains the same. I discussed this before as something in the modern diet causes this mechanism to go awry. What has happened is insulin resistance. Now we are on an upward spiral of increasing BMI unless we do something. I am concerned about fat kids. In all of history, children started eating at the adult table around ages 3 to 4. They may have required a slightly different diet before then, but at the adult table, they ate the same food, only less. They were eating the same as their parents. In this present time, we are at the point that about 30% of children are overweight or obese. That may be slightly better than the 40% of adults who are overweight or obese. This makes some sense as the children are eating the same things as the adults. But like adults, the problem may not only be how much they eat, but also what they eat, when they eat, and when they do not eat. I am going to assume that about age 6, the metabolic systems in the child's body are the same as adults, and they react the same way to insulin, leptin, glucagon, and fructose as adults do. I have no research from anyone to back this assertion, but will use it for my purposes. If you are an obese child, you probably have some elevation of your blood glucose over what would be normal for your age. Maybe you have a slightly higher insulin level than the rest of your age group. I do know that, like adults, you cannot get obese without insulin shoveling glucose into fat cells. Okay, now we have parents get fat on their own, and their children may have a propensity to get fat. What now? Many very smart people have labored to get a better understanding of this complex subject, but what do we do? The answer always seems to be the same. Eat right and exercise more. That sounds nice, but why don't you just tell them to lose weight? If I wanted someone to fast, why not just say, don't eat? I've already tried to answer this question in a small book on fasting and autophagy in the common man. That book is primarily aimed at adults, but there can be some application to children. In addition to telling children to eat less and exercise more, studies also advise the identification of the obese child, screening for the obese child, education of parents and children, various programs to provide exercise opportunities or proper foods, and of course numerous government programs. I don't think eating less and exercising more is the answer, it just often fails. I agree there needs to be basic education on nutrition. Just like this book, the more you understand, the more apt you are to comply. But this is not the answer. Most parents may have a knowledge deficit about what makes you fat, just like most fat adults do. They usually think they are eating too much, which they may be, but mainly they are not eating correctly, which may further induce them to eat too much. It takes education, convincing, and a baseline maintenance diet to solve the problem. Fasting a little may be part of the solution. You may need to have some sort of weight loss diet, of course not the reduced calorie, but then the maintenance diet. And let us dispense with exercise to lose weight. Despite evidence to the contrary, we still advise exercise to get fat people to their normal weight. Diet is what loses weight. Exercise can be a benefit in many ways, just not particularly for weight loss. Remember the Biggest Loser TV show. You can lose weight if you cut your calories in half and exercise 6 hours a day, but that is not a lifestyle, and your weight will return. Exercise is simply not the answer. The child eats what he is given. He does not have a job. He does not go out and buy his own food. He probably does not steal from the neighbors, although he may at times get junk food at his friend's house. I believe it is appropriate to lay the responsibility for the child's health on the parents. I also think it is the responsibility of the parent for the parent's health. Are we going to blame the government or the medical profession for this also? The key to a healthy diet in the family is the responsibility of the food engineer. Done right, this is a full-time job. My job is to give this individual some direction. Sometimes the question may arise regarding fasting in teenagers. As I have said, I do not believe in restricting calories for the most part in children. I do believe in a proper diet. I do not believe a lean teenager needs to fast longer than overnight. About age 18, they need to start their own maintenance diet. At the same time, if I had an obese 14-year-old, I would have to consider the risk-benefit of fasting. There is a poor outlook, metabolically speaking, for her life if she does not lose weight. It is quite possible, at this point in her life, to change her metabolic set point and carry that weight loss into adulthood. I have already discussed how difficult it is to change that metabolic set point as an adult, and fasting appears to be the most effective way to do this. At the same time, a child's metabolic set point may be changing all the time as the diet changes. My intuition is that it is easier to change a child's set point than an adult. It may be wisest to treat this 14-year-old as an adult. After all, she weighs as much as an adult. If we treated her as an adult, we would start with the ketogenic diet, and after weight loss has been achieved, switch to the lower-carb adult maintenance diet. It is possible that after a few years, she could go on a regular maintenance diet. We are waiting around for some of her old epigenetic changes to reverse. I do not know how long that takes, but imagine it would be a little faster than if she were an adult. Again, I am a retired physician, so nothing I give you is medical advice. I expect you to use your common sense to evaluate if you think what I have said is useful to your family. I have much more information on my website, kellygregg.com.